70 million Americans had medical devices implanted over the last 10 years. But can we trust that those devices have been properly tested and are safe to put in our bodies? A new documentary called The Bleeding Edge, released from Netflix today, says we can't. The film aims to show how the clinical trials run by medical device manufacturers are far from comprehensive, and the FDA doesn't have much regulation in place to stop unproven devices from going to market. Filmmakers Kirby Dick and Amy Zehring are here today to talk about how dangerous this industry can be. Welcome to you both.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
So as a starting point, please tell us, what is a medical device? I think a lot of listeners might not realize how much we lump into this category.
Well, I know the word sounds off, sounds hard to unpack, or you don't really understand what we're talking about, but it's any device you interact with when you're dealing with the healthcare industry. So that could be an x-ray, a CAT scan, a stethoscope even, a tongue depressor, a defibrillator, a hip replacement, breast implants, any kind of technology that is used to diagnose or be implanted in a human body. That's a medical device. So it's much more common. As you said, 70 million Americans have devices. So it's not something that's foreign or strange. It's actually something that we come in contact with every day.
And then just to add, there's also all the surgical devices that are used on you.
Right.
Yes.
Scanning and so forth.
Scanning, a Da Vinci robot, all the scalpels.
Laparoscopes.
Yes.
Laparoscopic surgery.
Somehow tongue depressor is important in this category too, because for me that just sort of shows the breadth out of the gate. You know, we're really talking running the gambit. Right now, what kind of vetting do medical devices have to go through?
Well, unfortunately, shockingly little. 98% of medical devices, implantable medical devices, the FDA does not require human clinical testing before they're put in human bodies. So
it's shocking. That means we're guinea pigs without knowing it. And I didn't know that, and Kirby didn't know that, and that's why we made this film, because that to us seems so unbelievable, honestly. I mean, that's scary.
Yeah. Well, so let's talk about some structural things that allow for that environment. What is the 510K pathway, and why is it so problematic?
Okay. The 510K pathway is the way that most, and really basically all of these 98% get on the market, or most devices get on the market. And the way it works is that if you have a new device, quote unquote, if you have a new device, you can get it on the market by just saying it's similar to another device that's already been cleared to be on the market. Now, and without testing it at all. So these devices can have significant changes that can affect humans in a completely different way, but it's not tested. Even more problematic is that new device, if it's based on an original device, that original device can have been already taken off the market, and they can still allow that as what's called a predicate device to let it go on, the new device to go onto market.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. So you might have a device, as long as your device is similar to some degree to a prior device, you can get cleared without any further testing or studies.
Yeah.
Which is really insane, right? Because a slight change in a hip implant device could be an exponential change once it's put in the body, right? It can torque a different way, it can affect a muscle a different way, it could be a different kind of metal, all these changes. And yet, as long as it's similar, they allow you to put it in. And as Kirby said, what's even more audacious is, honestly, if you have a device that's similar to a prior device that's been recalled, you still can get your device approved.
That's, to me, the most amazing thing to underscore, because the fact that you can base a device off something that's similar to something that's already on the market is one thing, but yes, the fact that it can be a failed device is tremendous, it's breathtaking. So how does the FDA approval process differ? This has sort of been baked into your answers, but how does it differ with drugs and pharmaceuticals versus medical devices?
Well, actually, I mean, we know that pharmaceuticals have a lot of problems themselves, but actually their approval process is much more strict than the approval process for medical devices. That's what's actually shocking and that's one of the reasons we made this film. I mean, you know, we know, or many, many people know a lot of the problems with the pharmaceutical industry, with big pharma, but the medical device industry is a sister industry that's almost as large that really very few people are aware of. The public isn't aware of, legislators aren't aware of the issues around it, and doctors, this is what we also found, did not understand the regulatory process as well.
And because people like us aren't aware of it, we consider ourselves well-informed, and consumers aren't aware of it, this industry has been allowed to operate under the radar for so long and chase profits instead of patient safety. We heard time and again people describe this industry as the Wild West. Hmm. Now, that's kind of scary.
Right, considering it's everything we put into our bodies.
Yes.
What was the Medical Device Amendment of 1976?
This is like a history lesson.
No, these are important.
I'm just worried no one's going to watch the film. It's really an interesting film.
Yeah,
this is like a PSA.
These are the building blocks that that sort of give us the framework that we're in right now.
Yeah. Well, right, but for listeners, it actually is a really gripping thriller, honestly. Yeah. You should read the reviews. People say it's like a horror film, but you know, one that you cannot stop watching and turn away from. And it's really, it tells the story of patients who have been harmed, but it also sort of does run you through, you know, what is wrong with these devices and why. And it's important information you can't afford not to know, honestly.
Right.
You know, and as I want to also underline that since birth, we interact with medical devices. I mean, if you haven't, you know, you as a baby, you know, you were ultrasounded, you know, you were pulled out with, you know, using instruments often, especially if you had a C-section. So again, I just want to really perforate the idea that this is something foreign that you don't need to think about. This actually, you know, devices are us and they are our future. You know, our phones are going to be implanted, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. So to answer the question, this in 1976 is when medical devices finally came under regulation and under the FDA regulation. And it was at that time or right around it that this concept of allowing a device to go on the market without first requiring human clinical trials, but instead allowing it to be similar to another device. That's when that was instituted.
So tell us about the film focuses on eShore, a birth control device, and the women who have been affected by it. Tell us about that, please.
Well, one of the threads, it focuses on about four different devices in depth, but one of the main threads is about these amazing women who figured out via the internet, like by just sort of connecting through social networks, that their devices, that the symptoms they were experiencing were all related to them having had this contraceptive implanted. It's called eSure. And so we sort of follow their journey in part. They've been this amazing network that's bonded, and they've done this incredible advocacy. And so we document what they've done, how they tried to stand up to Bayer, which is the corporation that ultimately owned the device, and fight and complain and have them hear it and try and get the product off the market. So, you know, the film documents their struggle. It's actually incredible, and it's also inspiring because these women, despite the depths of what they're suffering from, they find the strength to fight back. And it was a thrill to know them and to have the privilege to film them and to put their story out there.
Yeah, I mean, they go up against Bayer, which is this huge multinational corporation. They go up against the FDA, and they just didn't stop. I mean, this is what impressed us. For 6 or 7 years, they've been just nonstop building this. You know, they now have 37,000 people as part of their network. Tens of thousands of people have been harmed by eSure. You know, we know that in terms of reporting adverse events that from medical devices, that only a small percentage are reported. So there's probably hundreds of thousands of women that have been harmed by this.
And what's so remarkable, and you see in the documentary, is right. It's a contraceptive device, but the symptoms are systemic.
Right.
Like you can have it's supposed to work is to have your body have scar tissue, you know, to close the fallopian tubes around this piece of metal that's inserted in your fallopian tube. Now, when your body does that, it tries to fight the foreign object, right? So it causes an autoinflammatory response throughout the body. So a lot of these women were having migraines, were having, you know, digestive problems, nausea, stiffness, extreme pain, but they didn't relate it to the device itself. So that's part of the problem, and that's part of the way these device companies often can cover up or the ways that they get away with putting out faulty products is because consumers don't even realize to connect the product with the symptoms. So that's why, in part, the film is so revelatory and so important, and it's incredible the work that these women have done to sort of really pressure Bayer to take the product off the market.
Yeah, and I just wanted to add that doctors also aren't aware of the connection between these responses, these symptoms that are throughout the body caused by a medical device.
I'm D.W. Gibson speaking with Kirby Dick and Amy Zehring about their film The Bleeding Edge, released by Netflix today. So just a week ago, Bayer announced that they're taking Esure off the market here in the U.S. Do you think that had anything to do with the film?
Timing's kind of interesting, isn't it? Suddenly. The film actually premiered at the Tribeca Film Festival in April. It had amazing critical reviews. It had a tremendous audience response. Since then, of course, the trailer's been out, clips have been out, momentum has been building for its release. The women have been, many of the constituents in the film have been, mounting up their pressure. So I definitely think that Bayer clearly did this as a PR gambit in advance of the film's release in hopes of staving off what we know will be public outrage once they watch the film.
Tell us about the video from the approval meeting for Esure that the women from this Facebook group unearthed. I mean, it's a great example of sort of the work they did.
Well, this is, Esure was approved in 2002, and there was the FDA made a videotape of it. And what was shocking was in that, there was a committee of people that approved it, and what was shocking was a lot of the people in that committee talked about all the eventual problems that, people would eventually have, and they still approved it, which was just shocking.
There's a chilling moment where the people on the screen make a joke about it. In 10 years, there are going to be problems and they'll come looking for us and everyone laughs, right?
Yeah, that's what happens. One of the people who actually was voted for the process says, I think there was a certain awareness that there were a lot of problems with this. And so somebody made a joke that somebody 10 years from now will track us down and out us. And sure enough, these women did that.
Right.
And the film, of course, outed them.
It's remarkable. The documentary talks about people, talks to people, rather, who said they were encouraged to change their survey responses during clinical trials. And in some cases, the responses were crossed out and written for them, rewritten for them. How does that happen?
Oh, that seems criminal to me.
Well, yeah. I mean, what we found, one of the shocking things is that most clinical studies are funded by industry. So they have a complete incentive to sway the result. And as a result, if one reads a study funded by industry, one should be very, very suspicious. But, what we uncovered was that there were, as you said, they were actually changing the results. And that was shocking.
Yeah, because, the FDA doesn't really have the bandwidth, and also the mandates have been really weakened. I mean, the FDA is only as strong as the legislation we pass that it has to follow. And, industry, the device industry, is a $500 billion industry globally and a super powerful lobby. And it really has, it's supported in a very bipartisan way. So it's not a left or right issue. I mean, both parties really do the bidding of the device industry, honestly, but in a large part because they're not informed. So we really hope legislators watch this film and watch it carefully and think about it the next time they, pass legislation that really takes any of the power of FDA to do proper oversight.
Yeah, we had luck with a previous film where legislators were influenced. Amy and I made a film called The Invisible War about rape in the military about 5 or 6 years ago. And at the time we made the film, there were very few legislators who were really, or members of Congress who were really that concerned with the issue. But after about a year, Senator Gillibrand and other senators and representatives, both Republicans and Democrats, took this up, and as a result, 35 reforms were passed through Congress and passed into law. And that Senator Gillibrand attributed her initial interest in this to seeing the film. So we're hoping a similar thing happens with this.
Yeah, and we're simply not only legislators, but we also hope consumers are outraged, because that obviously puts pressure on legislators to vote, to do better voting on this issue.
Right. And if we can become informed consumers, we can become better consumers, right? When a group of FDA scientists did speak out against the way the agency was interacting with the medical device industry, they were all fired or laid off within 2 years. Do we have reason to believe that FDA can't be trusted on this issue, looking at that fact?
Yes, I think there's a lot of evidence that the FDA is not doing the job that we would like our agency to do to protect people. I mean, there's no question. What you're seeing is that there's incredible pressure from the medical device industry onto the FDA. And the FDA has been referred to, we heard this term over and over, a captive agency. It's captive to the medical device companies. It's captive in many ways to pharmaceutical. So it's really up to us as consumers to start putting pressure on our legislators to build a system that protects us.
You follow an orthopedic surgeon in Alaska, Dr. Stephen Tower, who starts seeing neurological and psychological issues after getting a certain kind of hip replacement. What happened to him, Amy?
Well, that's a very wild story, right? Here's this amazing, you know, this highly credible, you know, hardworking doctor up in Alaska, a biker, avid biker, and his specialty is implanting hips in patients.
He's an orthopedist.
So, you know, post 50, he starts having problems with his hip, realizes he needs a device himself, gets one implanted, fine, gets back on the bike, he's great. About a year later, it's not feeling so good, you know, just sort of pains and aches, and it's like, okay, that's sort of strange. And then a couple months later, he starts having sort of severe dementia symptoms. Well, his wife starts getting scared. Like, again, it's that same thing. He doesn't immediately think, oh, it must be my hip implant. Why would he?
Total disconnect.
So he's like, oh, okay, you know, but literally was losing his mind. And this is a really powerful moment in the film, but had the wherewithal because he was so smart and had the experience to start just sort of critically thinking, wait, none of this is matching up. I don't really match any of the profiles for the kind of dementia I'm having. And just thought, maybe I should just do a metal test for metals in my blood, and found out that he had really high levels of cobalt. And so had the implant removed, and within a month, all symptoms vanished. So then he started looking at his own patients and like following up with them and saying, hey, how are you doing 2 years later with that hip? And a lot, you know, and then he brought them back in for blood testing just to see and to ask what their symptoms were. And then lo and behold, one after another said, actually, you know, I thought it was old age. I thought it was dementia. I thought it was Alzheimer's, and it was all their hips. So, you know, that's an incredible story, which we track in the film.
I would just like to say that more than 10 million people have implants with cobalt in, you know, shoulders, knees, hips. So this is a worldwide problem that could affect many, many people. And it's scary because people get diagnosed with Parkinson's, with dementia. You know, Parkinson's is not a reversible disease, and they're just shuffled off when in fact, this is something that could be cured.
Which brings me to, it's a good point also that what's scary is that it would never occur to me to ask what kind of metal is this made of? Would it occur to you?
And so it
didn't even occur to the doctor.
The doctor.
Right?
Yeah.
We're all so trusting. And, you know, it just shows we all really have to ask these sort of really basic questions and do our homework now from here on out.
And why didn't the doctor know? This is one of the things that we were really surprised by. Doctors don't know the regulatory process for the FDA of how medical devices are approved or cleared. They don't know it. They assume that everything that the FDA says is okay to go into market has been tested in people first. It's been tested in humans first. So even the doctors who are implanting these devices. So this film is actually for doctors as well. And we've had just such positive response from doctors who have seen this. And it's not taught in medical schools. It's so basic. This, you know, that the regulatory process for the devices you're eventually going to implant, it seems like it should be taught in medical schools.
I mean, there were some jaw-dropping conversations in the film between some of the women who have had Eshore implanted and doctors outside of medical conference trying to connect with them. And those conversations yield what you just said. Doctors either in some cases are mired by hubris and won't listen to them. In some cases are getting information from these women who have found it on their own.
Yeah, I mean, you point to another way that, you know, in one of the scenes you're referring to, there's pushback from a doctor who says, no, everything has complications. And that's sort of all another way that industry has gotten away with sweeping this crisis under the carpet by just saying, you know, there's risk, so stop complaining, you know, or there's all, you know, this is just an aberration. And, you know, there's risk and there's risk. If you told me, here's a device that we've tested and 0.2% of patients have adverse events, do you want to have it implanted? Then I can make an informed decision. If you tell me, here's a device, it's never been tested in humans, maybe it'll help you, maybe it'll harm you, I'll make a different decision, you know, but I need to have that information before I, you know, move forward.
I mean, one thing we do want to say is that there are a lot of wonderful medical devices out there, no question about it. And we are completely supporting people developing new medical devices that work. The key thing is they have to work. And the only way you know if they work is if you test them first before you put them on the market. you test them in humans.
So what was it like conducting these interviews? I mean, what did these people think about the documentary?
Well, it was just oftentimes a very moving experience to have somebody come and talk to them and really listen to them, because in so many cases they weren't listened to. I mean, I can remember one describing, had mesh implanted in her, and she said it was like, and then it just caused all kinds of problems for years and years and years. And, you know, her name is Tammy. She's going to be needing a kidney as a result of it. She said it was like being raped by a medical device. So they really, I think it's been really heartening for them. But not only for them, millions of people have been harmed by medical devices over the years. I think it will mean a lot to everyone and their relatives.
Well, one of the women in your documentary is told that her constant bleeding is because Latino women have a lot more menstrual issues. Is this part of a reoccurring narrative of doctors not believing women about their pain and their health problems, Amy?
Yeah, very much so. A sub-theme of the movie is actually as bad as it is, look, it's an equal opportunity defender. Men and women both suffer from the lack of proper regulation and oversight in the device industry. However, on top of that, women are disproportionately harmed by the medical industry because of the innate gender bias and misogyny towards women, in that women aren't believed. So when they come in and complain, more often doctors will take a man's complaint seriously than they will a woman, and treat the man accordingly and sort of send the woman home. So we saw that also over and over and over again. It's funny. In fact, we interviewed one expert who said, yeah, male contraceptive devices, if they start to do one study and a guy complains of a headache, it's like, oh, can't use that device, and if they do a female contraceptive device and 600 women say it didn't work for them, like, it's fine, let's put it out there, you know?
And is it true that frequently takes more evidence to recall or abandon a device than it did for it to be brought to market?
Well, yes, I think that's very, very true, because part of the problem is there is the FDA does not have a very effective way of monitoring the post-surveillance, monitoring what happens after these devices are implanted. There's something called a UDI, unique device identifier, that they are only now beginning to put into process, which is, it's basically like a serial number for every device that goes into people. The fact that that hasn't existed for years and years and years, when Walmart has been able to identify which tomato is on which shelf, the FDA still can't identify which device is in which person yet. So they don't even have the information. So the only way things really get taken off the market is after tens of thousands and hundreds of thousands of people finally come forward 5, 10, 15 years later and say, this is really hurting me.
And it makes me think of another point, which was astonishing, is that they teach you how to put into the device. They don't always teach you how to take it out.
Right. This is a very important point. Yeah. And the doctors have no clue how to take out the devices, the mesh in particular. But
over and over again, we hear, well, they didn't train us to do that. Yeah. Well, like, what if there's a problem?
Yeah. It's remarkable. So the documentary is so gripping. It's upsetting. It makes you want not to put anything in your body. But a lot of the devices, as you pointed out, Kirby, are functioning and are life-saving. How can viewers discern when to trust their doctors and get the device?
Go ahead.
Ask a lot of questions.
Yeah.
Ask a lot of questions. Are there studies on this device? Have you personally put it in? How did you train to put it in? What have been the results of your clients? Can I talk to some of your clients? Can I see the studies? Who wrote the studies? Were the studies funded by the industry? Are you funded by the industry? A lot of doctors sometimes are on the payroll of these device companies they can't really be on the payroll. So what is it? They get speaker's fees or there's
Some of these doctors have gotten tens of millions of dollars from medical device companies. Yeah. The other thing, the easiest thing to do first is just go on the internet, put in the device, the specific device that's going to be put in, and then put problems or something like that beside it and just start searching. Because if you start seeing a lot of people on the internet complaining, I would back off. And then get some other opinions before I put it in. This is a decision that will be for life. You're putting in something for life very often, and there can be real consequences. Take more time to investigate the medical device that's put in you than the car or computer that you're buying.
And new isn't always better. Like for me now, I want a product that maybe they, you know, devised in the 70s and 80s, and I can see how long it lasted in people.
The long tail has been
Exactly.
Well, it is a gripping film that will keep you on the edge of your seat for sure, but it is also an important film, and I'm so grateful that you both came here to talk to me about it today.
Thank you so much. We hope everyone watches it. It starts streaming today on Netflix.
Indeed.
The Bleeding Edge.
I'm D.W. Gibson, and I've been speaking with Oscar-nominated filmmakers Kirby Dick and Amy Zehring about their new Netflix original documentary, The Bleeding Edge, which chronicles the injuries caused by medical devices.